This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. What triggers someone to walk into a bank, pull out a gun, and demand money from a teller? Can psychological profiling tell us anything about a street corner hustler? What plays a bigger role, psychology or society? Our next guest spent a year working in a maximum security federal prison in Atlanta. He conducted everything from anger management counseling to pretrial psych assessments. His office was on the cell block. Ivory Tolson is now an assistant professor of counseling psychology at Howard University. Thanks for joining us, Ivory.
Thank you.
So what did you learn at this prison about criminal behavior and basically what takes people from thinking about crime, which I think plenty of people do, if only is a fantasy of, you know, how, you know, what if I got away with the money lying, you know, in the street corner,
right,
to someone who really makes crime a way of life?
Yeah, well, I learned quite a bit. And that the year that I worked at the maximum security federal penitentiary in Atlanta, one of my primary responsibilities was to administer an assessment called the psychopathy checklist. And psychopathy is a clinical diagnosis for someone who has a natural criminal disposition, someone who receives gratification out of a variety of criminal and risky lifestyle behaviors. And my dissertation was looking at the psychometric properties. When I say psychometric properties, I mean whether or not this test is a fit test, if it's appropriate to use, if it gets the kind of information that we needed to get for certain populations. And I did an assessment of this instrument on African American male inmates. And what prompted me to do that particular study was because the instrument that we were using, the Hare Psychopathy Checklist, was originally normed on a Canadian inmate population that had very few African Americans in it. I guess no African Americans as we think of them in the United States, and maybe some Afro-Canadians. But it's widely used in the criminal justice system here in the United States. And so the risk with that, if you're giving an assessment to African Americans, but the norm reference is white Americans, then there's certain risk involved with that.
So you think that there can be a question of whether or not even how we think about these criminal justice issues is reflective of racial differences, but that the whole idea of racial differences on any level has been one of the biggest bonfires of world culture, you know, whether
right.
there are physical differences, ethical differences, intellectual differences. What are you really looking for when you look at norming a test based on racial differences? I mean, isn't committing a crime just committing a crime?
Well, there are certain behaviors that may be normal in one culture, but indicative of something else in another culture. Certain tests measure behaviors that are related to crime, not the crime in and of itself. So, for instance, one of the items of the psychopathy checklist is heightened grandiose sense of self. So someone who is very egotistical could have a score bumped up on this checklist. Now, the problem as it respects to race is if you have one culture where egotistical behavior may be associated with crime, but another culture where egotistical personas is something that is learned and adapted in that culture, and it may mean something else, something a lot less harmless, then that's when you get into those kinds of issues.
All right. When you think about where we are today in our society and faced with the economic challenges that arguably could squeeze more people into a life of crime,
mm-hmm.
What psychological factors combine with opportunity? I mean, there's
right.
some – maybe the question is, are there some people who are criminally minded, just simply criminally minded, and other people who kind of have a tipping point where they will become criminals if there's certain things that go certain ways in their lives?
Right. And that's a good question, and something that's studied quite a bit. We can see with any race or culture that the segment of that population that has the highest incidence of poverty also has more criminal behavior. And I think that we can use basic common sense to understand that there are certain survival mechanisms that come into play when someone is in an impoverished condition, and they may resort to crime as a means of survival. Not everyone in that same condition will respond in the same way. There are societal influences over criminal behavior, but there are also some people who are more likely to commit crime when faced with certain challenges. And so you can have two people, you remove any social barriers, neither one of them will commit crime. But you take those same two people, place them in an adverse social condition, one of them might commit crime, the other one will find other ways. It's a little bit of both.
Right. Now, the risk of young black men dying of homicide has increased 31% since 2002, mm-hmm. according to a recent study. And right. black men are disproportionately likely to be either the victim of a crime or the witness of a crime. What about the issue of post-traumatic stress disorder? Does this ever come up in really analyzing how people react to crime or even a reason why people who are traumatized may feel like crime is normal?
Right. Yeah. And this is something that I just recently wrote about. I think one problem that we have in criminal psychology, among the criminal psychologists that's working with African Americans, we tend to rely very heavily on sociological literature to help us to understand black criminal behavior. And there are certain problems involved with this. One problem is that I think a lot of criminal psychologists operate under the assumption that young black men are inoculated to the effects of violence. And so you may have, white females, if they're a victim of violent crime, our society tends to take that very seriously. I don't think it's anything very controversial what I'm saying. All you have to do is look at the news and see, like the Holloway case and things like that. When we have a white female victim, it gets a different type of coverage than a poor black male in the inner cities. And so we look at that. Criminal psychologists are looking at the same thing. People actually practice it. And so we miss the symptoms of post-traumatic stress in a lot of young black men. When you look at the numbers, young black men are more likely to be a victim of a violent crime, a witness to violent crime than any other race group in the United States. Yet they are very rarely diagnosed with post-traumatic stress. And post-traumatic stress can lead to avoidant behavior. It can lead to what may look like apathy. It could lead to a lot of anxious behavior, and untreated, it could also lead to more violent behavior.
Well, thank you so much. That was Ivory Toldson. He's an assistant professor of counseling psychology at Howard University and editor-in-chief of the Journal of Negro Education. And he joined us from NPR's headquarters in Washington, D.C.